Now time for Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmental responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Top Hat Entertainment, helping you with all your party needs from DJs to inflatables. They have it all. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining the right mortgage can be. And Momento's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners. Williston location, 879-1000. This is Sports Saturday, living the dream and taking you with us on 101.3 The Game.
Oh, he's not lying. He is not lying. We are living the dream and taking you with us. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. I am your host, Jeff Paul. And today with us as well, my co-host, the great, the talented, the award-winning sports writer from the Burlington Free Press, Austin Danforth. Good morning, my man.
Sup, boys.
What is happening today, Austin? You've been a busy guy.
I have been busy. I've been less busy this week. It's been nice.
I bet.
It's been real nice.
But I do want to talk about that today because what an experience it's had to be for you the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, you could stretch it back. I mean, the last week before this one was super.
Right.
And you're talking about the NCAA tournament.
I am.
It was, you know, a busy 4 to 5 weeks before that that just sort of crescendoed last week in Hartford. UVM was close.
They were.
I mean, like, and I was like this close too. I mean, yeah. There was an inbounds play about 2 minutes to go. I think it was Terrence Mann was right in front of me. I could have tugged his jersey.
You should have.
No, that would have been impartial and of poor journalistic ethics. That's not why they let us sit there.
Exactly. I get it.
So, yeah, it was a fun week.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation today. 802-655-6672. Or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line. Same phone number, 802-655-6672. What a show we have today. We've got Eric Bolin of New York Newsday. Going to talk about the Yankees. Obviously, World Series aspirations for the New York Yankees. And they've started the season again. Look, they played one game. Let's not go nuts here. But the season started out the right way if you're a Yankee fan. We're going to talk to Eric about that. In the second half of the hour, we've got NBA editor for Fansided.com, Ian Levy, to get us in the loop on what's going on in the NBA, Celtics, Golden State, Philadelphia. I mean, there's so many storylines right now in the NBA, and we are creeping closer and closer, Austin, to the playoffs.
Right, up is down is up, all that stuff.
All that good stuff. But let's start with I do want to get into this with you. First of all, as a journalist in a small town like Burlington overall,
yep,
to have the opportunity to be not only, let's start with the America's Championship, just courtside in that arena, the expectation that was going on with Vermont. And we talk about that program a lot on this radio station and on our radio show about the success of the UVM men's basketball program. But there was a lot of pressure on those kids going into that America's Championship game. You know, I had said it a few hours before on our radio show that it seemed like UMBC had the elixir to beat the Catamounts.
And it did seem like that.
It seemed like there was just an edge there that, you know, that Vermont seemed to have over everybody else. UMBC kind of had that little magic. But mm-hmm. UVM that weekend, Austin, you were front and center, just took it away from them and really made a story for themselves.
Yeah. Alex Abrami and I were headed to the arena. He picked me up so we could carpool and save spaces.
And that's very good. You know, listen, carpooling is good for the environment. So there you go. You guys just keep doing it.
It may or may not just be because he lost his parking permit, but
gotcha.
So on the short ride to Patrick, we're talking like, it's going to be close, right? It's always close. Like that championship game is always close. When was the last, like, honest to goodness, like, blowout? And it was that 05 game.
Yep.
There was one between then and now that was actually the same exact point total as it was between UMBC and UVM this year. But we're thinking, well, it's good we thought of that, but like, that's not going to happen. Like that's
yeah.
And especially
with the clientele, the kids that UMBC had on the floor.
Right.
I mean, some of those kids are the team. There's a team. They were on the floor when they beat UVM the year before. They were on the floor when they beat Virginia in the first round of the NCAA tournament. There are some players in that team that understand how to win big games.
And they took it to UVM twice already.
They did, exactly.
So you watch that unfold, and it feels a little different than the year before. It feels like UVM felt a little more empowered.
Yeah.
And then the second half happens, and they just start to pull away, and you're like, okay, this is like, this isn't going to be one of those where we get to the 8 minute mark and then all of a sudden it starts to seize up and the train just throws the brakes on the tracks. And it didn't happen this year.
And you could tell from the get-go that Anthony Lamb wasn't going to let it happen.
Oh, God. I love the stat because I was tracking it. And like a couple minutes into the second half, it was UVM 36, Anthony Lamb 24.
Yeah.
UMBC 23.
Yeah.
Like that was as good as that was a fair marker of how well he played. It was crazy.
And then obviously UVM getting the monkey off that back, that UMBC monkey off the back. They win the American East Championship. They win the regular season and they win the conference tournament. So they go on to the NCAA tournament. And we had talked, Bernie and I had talked at exhaustion that we felt if they did get a 13 seed, that the other, all of those four seeds were beatable. The only team that I saw that was a four seed to me, that was a problem with Florida State.
Yeah,
and that to me was the matchup that I felt was going to be the biggest problem. And again, we know what happened. UVM played a great game, but for me, the story is, Austin, just give us some background on what it's like to be a press member at an NCAA tournament game.
It's a lot. It's quite a bit of a circus, because especially for that first round where there's four games on one day, eight teams from different corners of the country. And so you have not just the national media folks, like I think on press row on game day, we were three seats down from, the guy from the New York Times, Mark Tracy. We were four seats from Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic, who's one of the premier names in college basketball reporting. But, you know, so you see all these people sort of converge on the arena at different points in time and from different places. And it's sort of this whirlwind around the court that, you know, they shuffle the players in and out of the court on the practice day, and then they do the same thing on the game day. But honestly, the maybe the wildest moment was cut in during the UVM game. I think it was middle of the second half. UVM is still right neck and neck with Florida State. I think it was a media timeout. Anthony Lamb's waiting to shoot free throws. In the media timeout, they put the Auburn New Mexico State game on the video screen.
Yeah.
And everybody's ooing and awing because, you know, that game was going down to the wire. It was crazy close. And they cut away with one free throw to go. And the entire arena groaned.
Yeah.
And there were boos. And meanwhile, Anthony Lamb's trying to step up and shoot his free throw, which they've paid to come watch.
Right.
So it tells you how interconnected and experiential the whole thing is for not just people doing the job, but the people in the stands, and like they're paying attention to multiple places at once. And it's just sort of this web of madness. It's awesome.
Here's me, like, who is just I mean, the fact that I get to do this every Saturday is like the best part of my week. It really is. I mean, just be able to talk sports, cause I'm just a fan, and they give me a press pass for that UVM American series. Right. And that, to me, I'm just like, you know, I'm walking around, like, I'm looking up, I'm standing on the floor, I can go wherever I want, I'm thinking this is the coolest thing. Just to be able to be in that arena, to be in that position, to go where you want to go, you're covering something, you know, you're working, obviously. Yeah. You're a professional, you're award-winning, so maybe it's different because I'm a fan and you're working it. But it's got to be so surreal to be in that arena. I mean, you just said a second, you could have touched, man, you know, the Florida State super player from Florida State's right in front of you. You know, you're that close, you're in the middle, you can hear the huddles, you can see what's going on, you're watching the guys behind the scenes. It's got to be surreal for you.
On a professional level, it's the... Yeah, this is like, that was the first time I'd gotten to cover the NCAA tournament. I've been to watch. I got to watch the Syracuse game in 2005, but that was as a fan. And this was, it's always cool to go someplace and you see like names and, you know, all, like writers you recognize. It's like, oh, we're doing the same thing right now. The professional part of it, I was more concerned that I couldn't get the Wi-Fi in the arena on my computer because Alex and I are trying to do updates and like, you know, pre-write stuff for the web. And and apparently that was like that was like the tip of the iceberg as far as like structural issues there at the XL Center. I think there was the changeover between the first session and the second session was a nightmare. Like it was empty when Villanova tipped off because people couldn't get into the arena.
Yeah.
But it was, it was a blast, and like doing it with Alex, who you know, we work in the same foxhole, you know, 12 months out of the year. But that week is like that stretch from whenever UVM plays in that conference championship game to whenever they stop playing is going to be the biggest week in Vermont sports every year.
And let me just say, I appreciate what you and Alex, you guys have kept everybody in the loop throughout this whole process. I followed Twitter with you. I've watched Facebook with you, that whole process behind the scenes stuff. So you guys did a tremendous, now you do a tremendous job all the time, but for a very special UVM season, you guys did a great job keeping the fans invested.
Thank you. And not to toot our own horn, but we got quite a bit of really positive feedback. Yeah. I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, well, you guys are very talented at what you do. Text line here, we got Jay just text us. While I understand UVM is a very good small mid-major program, they aren't as close to winning another NCAA tournament game as the UVM hype machine seems to believe. Florida State did not play okay or didn't play very well in the first half, only scored 27 points, and it wasn't because of UVM's stellar D. Florida State played much better the next two games. Jay, I disagree with you completely in that situation that, you know, Vermont's matchup with them wasn't great, but Vermont was making shots. And when you make shots and put pressure on teams, especially teams as talented as Florida State, you're going to give yourself a chance to win. And you can call this a hype machine, but I think that's being lazy to call Vermont's program a hype machine. They're bringing in big-time players. He's developing a program, and he's been able to compete at a very high level. If you didn't watch all season, they competed against their whole conference pre-conference schedule was against power. Most were Power Five conferences. They pushed Lipscomb. I mean, this is a good program that's coming.
And I thought that Lipscomb game was the worst performance they had conference. And it was 2 days after going to double OT against St. Bonaventure.
Exactly.
5 days after a different game they won.
Yeah, I think this basketball team, this program right now is closer to winning an NCAA tournament game than Brennan's team was that beat Syracuse. I think the game that they beat Syracuse was just the perfect storm. They got the job done. It was an epic moment for Vermont sports. But this program now and the athletes they have now, this is a big time program. And whether you like it or not, I get it. And the chances of them beating a Power Five school in an NCAA tournament is probably small because they're a small mid-major program. But they're close to winning a game.
Yeah, and what you were talking about, like looking at Florida State and being like, that's the one you don't want to get, just matchup-wise, knowing what they bring. I thought Vermont played a beautiful first half.
Oh, perfect job.
The way they collapsed on the big guys made life really difficult.
Their spacing on offense I thought was spectacular. John Becker's game plan offensively for that game was spectacular.
It absolutely was, and it got away from the second half. They threw away some balls
when it was
real close. They missed four front ends of one and ones. Yep. So of their six missed free throws, four cost them extra free throws. Three of those one and ones they lost.
Yeah.
So essentially, you got fouled and you turned it over.
Yeah.
My takeaway, and I've thought about it in the past, like when they go to Kansas and they play well, or they play well at Kentucky, or they play well against Purdue 2 years ago.
Yep. Played well against Kansas this year.
Played well against Kansas this year.
Played well against Louisville.
All the above. John Becker likes to play straight up. Like, he likes to play his guys against their guys. And obviously they work up a game plan. But, like, at the end of the day, all those are losses. And as the outsider, I'm just thinking, like, if he's not junking up a system or whatever to really overcome that gap, at the end of the day, that gap is, it exists in all those games.
Sure.
Where it's that they don't have the depth or they don't quite have the talent to overtake a team like that on a day where they're not also crazy lucky.
Right.
So isn't that where, like, my just sort of rhetorical question is, isn't that where game plans come in, where you have to make up that talent deficit through X's and O's or strategy or whatever?
And that's where we're going to talk about, Stephen A. Smith made some comments about the unit. And again, I mean, people are going to say you're a Virginia fan, but Stephen A. Smith made some ridiculous comments about Virginia yesterday that we're going to get in the next hour. But I think Jay here needs to text again on the text line, who are the athletes other than Lamb? The whole team is full of great basketball players, great athletes. It's not always about,
they're just not 6'10 athletes.
Exactly. And they may not have the same amount of talent as, say, the Power Five conferences get, these one and done teams get. But that's not, there's a lot of ways to win basketball games. You know, you win to the strengths that you have.
Right.
You know, and I think when you see teams like Texas Tech, teams like Purdue, teams like the University of Virginia, those are not the flashiest teams. They're not getting the five-star athletes, but they learn how to win. They're very well coached, and they're able to follow their game plan. And when you do that in the game of basketball, it's not all the NBA where you run up and down the floor, you don't play defense, you make a bunch of threes, you're dunking the basketball. A perfect example is North Carolina last night. North Carolina last night lost that basketball game to Auburn, not because they're not a good team or because Auburn's better, but North Carolina didn't play any defense.
Right.
They did not play defense yesterday. And the perfect example of that is with 6 seconds left in the first half, that kid from Auburn went from one end of the floor to the rim without any pressure and made a layup.
Right.
That's why North Carolina's not in this tournament anymore.
They got beat at their own up-tempo game because they didn't want to get back.
I mean, that's the point. You play to your strengths. And John Becker has taken this program and has put them in a position to be competitive against some of the best conferences in the world and the best conferences in the country.
Yeah.
Period. And what they did against Florida State was special.
I might have been a little unfair to, you know, nitpicking like strategy. Like, okay, so if you can't win these games with the players and the game plan you have, the other day might have been more down to like, there was a couple little execution bugaboos, like the turnovers, the free throws, the stuff they normally don't
do. And Florida State's a great team. They're a great basketball team. You had to be perfect to beat Florida State.
I thought UVM, once you got through that weekend in Hartford, I thought UVM showed probably the second best of any team other than Florida State. Like if you remove Carson Edwards scoring 42 points for Purdue, then it's a coin flip with all those rest of those teams.
I mean, you look at their roster, Steph Smith, really great athlete. Ben Shungu, really great athlete. Isaiah Maul, really great athlete. The Duncan brothers. Sure. I don't know where on that roster you're looking and going, wow, that guy's not an athlete. But
no, I agree. Exactly. And it's about you get the best of what you have. And that's why I love programs like Vermont's, like Virginia's, like Texas Tech's, like Purdue's. Because they are guys that play 4 years, they develop. I'm just telling you. We're going to have a segment on this next hour, but I do want to get to our, before we go to break, because we got a full day going here, man. It's going to be a big day. Our Green City Garage poll question, Green City Garage located at 49B Commerce Ave, number 5 in South Burlington. Give them a call at 802-651-9299. My buddy Chris Walsh does a great job. It's the only place I bring my car. And for anyone that knows me, I know nothing about cars. I mean, my car right now, I can't figure out how to turn the heat on. So, I mean, I take my car to him all the time.
Don't you need a computer science degree to run the car you're running right
sometimes,
now?
Sometimes you do. Any car I drive, I can't figure out. But listen, if you got something going on with your car, you need an oil change, you need tires, you got something happening with your engine, check out Chris Walls at Green City Garage. And our Green City Garage poll question today is, and as obviously you and I are big baseball fans, baseball has started. The question today is, what's your favorite sports start season? So when the season starts, what do you look forward to the most? Mm. We've got four choices. The Big Four, Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, or NHL. Go to at 101.3 The Game on Twitter and give us your answer. It's tough for me because I love NHL season, but to me, when Major League Baseball starts, it means it's getting to be spring and summer, and that's my favorite time of year.
Of those four, my answer would be NFL. Now, if I was to expand it, I'm gonna go golf.
It's
not even like the start of the PGA season because it used to start in January. Now it starts in like October.
Exactly.
I'm talking Masters weekend.
That's a big weekend.
For us, that's when we know, okay, snow's not going to come back for a while. Yeah. We're going to be good.
And you know, when the Masters is a big, I mean, the Masters is kind of separate from golf season. That's its own entity in itself.
Right.
Just that music that you hear on TV when they start to, you know, when CBS starts to market that a little bit. All right. So check out our question on Twitter, 101.3 The Game. Answer that question for us. When we come back, we're going to move this thing to baseball. Hey, man, the Yanks are off to a 1-0 season. Are they going to beat the Red Sox, Austin? I'm just kidding. It's so early. We were talking to Eric Boland of New York Newsday. Don't go anywhere.
Another day of sports talk in the Champlain Valley. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
It is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. I'm your host, Jeff Paul. Austin Danforth in the seat to my right. What's happening, buddy?
It's the name they gave me.
Nice little UVM chat we had first segment. We got some people on the text line. We'll get back to the UVM question a little bit later on. But at the end of the day, just a tremendous season by John Becker and his kids. A great way to end it. I think they've represented the state incredibly well, and I think they really are making a name for themselves. And in the bigger picture of the NCAA, they're making a big name for themselves.
And that future is super bright. They lose Ernie Duncan and Sam Dingba. They bring back Ben Shungu, who just emerged like crazy the last month of the season. Steph Smith, like the way he finished the year. Robin Duncan's going to be better. They got a kid coming in, apparently. I think his name is Aaron Deloney from Oregon.
Yeah, their recruiting classes are insane.
Who just fills it up.
Yeah.
Just like, it's about a 6 foot tall gunner.
And the facility, we're going to have an upgraded facility soon. I mean, just think about what happens.
Got to get those shovels in the ground
quick,
though.
We got to do it, but it's coming. We know it's coming, and that'll be all right. Listen, let's move this conversation to one of my favorite times of year, baseball season, and let's move it to the Bronx, where my heart is, with our good friend, New York Newsday Yankee insider Eric Boland, who joins us now in the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Good morning, Eric. How's it going, buddy?
Good morning, guys. How are you today?
Oh, good, good. So the first question I have is for a guy that's been spending all this time in Tampa in the beautiful weather, you happy to be back in the Big Apple?
Always. This is home, so I enjoy my time in spring training, but when I fly into typically LaGuardia and see the New York skyline, it's always good to be home.
I bet it is. Eric, let's get in right to this with the Yanks. I mean, a lot was made going into this offseason, especially with Harper and Machado being out there and the expectation that the Yankees would pick up one, if not both of them. I think they surprised a lot of their fans with not picking up either of them. But boy, this team, and it's really early in the season, but when you look at this team on paper, when they're healthy, it looks like a really good roster.
Yeah, I mean, they're loaded, and an opposing team, a scout that I was talking to during the spring, I think kind of synopsized it best. He said, quote, "You know how loaded this team is? They have a three-time gold glover and former NL batting champion as a reserve." And that's he's referring to DJ LeMahieu, who was one of their free agent signings in the offseason. And really, you know, you can quibble with parts of the rotation. You could say maybe there's some depth issues there, but I think that that's sort of overruled, if you will, by the depth of the bullpen, which should be the best in baseball. Even with Dellin Betances down, he started a throwing program in the last few days, so they don't expect him to be out too long. But even with Betances gone, you still have four guys that you could argue are capable of closing games. And I don't think you can really say that about anybody else's bullpen. And the lineup is stacked as it was last year when they hit a single season record 267 home runs. And the belief is Aaron Judge doesn't miss the kind of time that he missed last year, and if Giancarlo Stanton, who had a better year than he was given credit for last year when he had 38 home runs, but the expectation is that he's better than he was a season ago, maybe cuts down on the 200 plus strikeouts that he had, that they can make another run at you know, a single season home run record. So I think it's the best team in the American League by far. I think they're better than the Red Sox because of the bullpen. And I picked them to win the World Series. And before you say, oh, well, you're a Yankees homer, I haven't picked them to win the World Series. This is my 11th year covering the team. I haven't picked them to win probably since 2010. And I picked them to miss the playoffs a few straight years in 15, 16, 17, something like that. So, yeah, I think it's a pretty loaded team, and they have the farm pieces to go out and get midseason help if they need to, and every team who's in contention obviously usually will make a few moves, and the Yankees I don't think will be any different in that regard.
To me, it seemed like not going after Harper and Machado, not getting them anyway, was the smart, yeah, sensible thing to do, because I as you just said, I mean, that what they brought back, the pieces they have in place, the way they've been trending, it just seemed like if you add one or both or but either of those guys, you're just going to open up a hornet's nest that with the lineup, with the roster, the day-to-day management stuff that
and
the money that you wouldn't have had otherwise. And like they've been knocking on the door, and it seems like this year's the year they're primed to take that next leap.
Yeah, look, you know, they came close in 17. They kind of surprised a lot of people when they came back on the Indians. Remember, the Indians won 100-plus games in 2017, had that incredible winning streak, and they were the heavy favorite in that division series against the Yankees, were up two games to none in the best of five, and the Yankees stormed back and won that series and then took the Astros to a seventh game. And, of course, the Astros eventually won the World Series that year. And then the Yankees last year, with pretty steep expectations for them, won 100 games, but they happened to have the buzzsaw that was the Boston Red Sox in the same division, who won 108 games and obviously took them out in four games in the division series. But you talk to everyone involved, and you know the Yankees are going to say what they're going to say, but when you talk to opposing team scouts and talent evaluators and executives, they all say, and I agree with them certainly, that this team as currently constituted is better than the one that won 100 games last year. And last year's, again, was pretty good, even though they weren't given the credit for it because Boston was so good. So it really is, you know, you can nitpick any team to death. And I'm sure there were Red Sox fans last year in the midst of winning 108 games that said, oh, this team's flawed, the bullpen's this, the catching situation is bad, et cetera, et cetera. You can always nitpick a team to death. But again, this team looks pretty loaded, and barring a real slew of injuries to some key guys that would keep them out long term. You know, I don't see how this team doesn't win 100 games again this year.
Eric, one of the interesting stories this offseason was Greg Bird and Luke Voit, you know, contending for who's going to be the starting first baseman. And with the Aaron Hicks injury right now and him being on the IR with his back issues, it looks like, you know, I mean, it keeps Luke Voit or Greg Bird on the roster. But when he comes back, I mean, how are you going to take Luke Voit off this major league roster? I mean, what will happen there?
Well, one of them is going to go to the minor leagues, and one of them was going to go, if Hicks was healthy and made it through spring training, one of them was going to start the year in Scranton, and you'd have to give someone in the organization truth serum to get the answer on who they would have sent down, because both guys really had good springs. Voit showed up motivated to show last year wasn't a fluke. That's using a phrase that he used a few times during the spring. He also spent a lot of the winter working on his defense. You know, he looks like a middle linebacker and is not the most deft in the field. And he took that to heart over the winter and worked on his defense. And that did show this spring. He didn't turn into Keith Hernandez over there, but there certainly was improvement. And then, of course, you know, you've got Greg Bird, who might be the most unpopular Yankee among Yankee fans.
Yeah.
which I think is a little bit unfair, but that's another issue. But, you know, the Yankees still see that lefty swing that when he's healthy, you know, is a perfect fit, they feel, for Yankee Stadium. He is a little bit better fielder than Voit. But, you know, the reality is that Voit came into that competition this spring with a leg up, to use a phrase of Aaron Boone's and Brian Cashman's, over the winter. And he didn't do anything to lose it. So I think Bird probably would have got set down.
Interesting.
But no one will tell. Nobody will tell you that for sure. That's just my supposition, based on, again, the fact that Voit didn't do anything to lose the job. But, you know, Bird does still have you know, quite a few defenders in the organization. Not as many as he used to, you know, has a lot of fans in the organization, as does Voit. I think it really would have, you know, I'm repeating myself, I just think it would have been fascinating to see when their hand was forced, and when it eventually will be forced, because Hicks is going to be back at some point, exactly what they do with those two guys, because they were resolute saying one of them was going to go down when camp broke, and the Hicks injury at least put off what was going to be a very difficult decision for that time being.
You mentioned, you know, the Yankees had a bunch of injuries this spring training, but one of the, you know, obviously Severino's a big deal. Can you give us an update on where he's at?
Started a throwing program about a week or so ago. Just 2 days ago, he's been throwing on flat ground. Got it out to 120 feet. That's where, you know, guys usually start their throwing programs. They don't go on a mound right away. Aaron Boone, when he talked to us before the season opener on Thursday, said that at some point this weekend, so that's either today or tomorrow, he expected Severino and Betances, by the way, to both be up on a mound to continue their throwing program. But when he got shelled a few weeks ago, Brian Cashman, the general manager, had said, don't expect Severino back until May at the earliest. So, you know, that time frame has not changed, but he's not going to be back anytime soon, at least in terms of when you're talking about April.
So the other two questions I have is this. Betances, obviously his velocity was down. They found there was something going on in the shoulder. Was it the shoulder situation? They shut him down. And there's an article this morning in the New York Post I was reading that they're a little bit concerned about Chapman and his velocity. What's happening with those two guys?
Well, you know, that's a little out of context. It was scouts who were expressing some concern, not the Yankees. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, his velocity was down a little bit in the spring. Power pitchers like him typically, you know, don't have their full velocity until, you know, a couple, 3 weeks, maybe even 4 weeks into the season. Betances would say he never felt that he was at his peak until even mid-May in terms of the velocity. But, look, it's worth keeping an eye on. And you know, I've talked to some scouts as well that kind of discussed that during the spring and said, yeah, you know, his velocity, you know, he never threw 100 during the spring, but he also wasn't usually throwing 90, 91, 92. So the number of breaking balls that he threw in that first appearance, it is one of those things that you kind of put in the back of your head and you say, okay, this is worth keeping an eye on. So I think it's probably too small of a sample size, one game, to say that there's concern there, But as one of the scouts pointed out that George King from the Post talked to, did say Chapman is 31 years old. And I always remember Mariano Rivera, his retirement press conference, saying, something to the effect, you know, there's only so many bullets in that arm. And for a guy like Chapman that, that is forever, you know, a long, long time thrown 100+ miles an hour, that's not going to last forever. And he is at that age where you could see a drop off. So I would not dismiss it as a concern, but I would also say one outing in cold weather, no less, you know, it's probably a little too early to fret about it.
Since we have someone from New York on the line and we get a lot of flack at the Burlington Free Press here where I work about not doing enough with the other New York team, is there any hope for the Mets this year?
You know, I think there is, and let me be very, because when I get asked Mets questions, I like to, you know, preamble by saying I cover the Yankees. I'm in the Yankees clubhouse. I talk to Yankee scouts and executives.
Of course,
and,
yeah.
And Yankee players, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, the reality is I probably don't know much more about the Mets than you do and what you read on a regular basis. But, you know, I think if Robinson Cano stays healthy, I watched him. This is my 11th year covering the Yankees, so I got to see him from 09 through 13. He's an incredible, incredible player. He obviously is a little bit longer in the tooth now at 36, but you saw in the season opener what he's still capable of doing. I had made an incredible defensive play that I was lucky enough to see that kind of work from him, that kind of wizardry really on a regular basis, up close and personal, and the power that he's still going to have in that bat. I think he can make a big difference if he can stay on the field. You know, we'll see about that. And obviously, and I'm not reinventing the wheel here, you have to love the rotation. And so I think if those top guys, really their first four, if they're able to stay on the field and each make 25, 30 plus starts, let's say, I don't see why they can't contend in that division. Are they as good as the teams that are favored? I don't think so. But I'm not knowledgeable enough to say either. But again, given health, I think that's certainly a team that's going to play a lot of meaningful September games and have a chance to, at worst, steal a wild card spot.
New York News Day's Eric Boland, thanks so much for the time, buddy. We'll touch base with you again later in the season.
Look forward to it. Have a good weekend, guys. I enjoyed talking to you as always.
Thanks, my friend. Thanks. Appreciate that. Have a great day. Interesting chat. Listen, baseball season's here. It's going to be Yanks and Red Sox, looks like, in the American League East. The Mets, listen, I mean, I agree with him. The Mets are in a great position right now. Rotation's good. There's a lot of hunger there with the Mets. Why not?
Yeah. And I always like to throw something funky in there.
Throw a bone to the Mets. You got to throw the bones in there for
throw
the Mets.
Throw the old
Davis
pitch in the Yankee interview, yeah. So.
He didn't stumble, though. He didn't stumble.
Nope.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, do you hear about these NFL rule changes?
No.
Oh, my God.
I just heard about Andy Reid wearing shorts to, like, the coach's meeting photo.
That's my boy right there. We'll be right back.
Back to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Oh, what a show we've had so far. I talked some UVM basketball, which is always fun to talk about, with my boy Austin Danforth. It's good to see you, man.
Good to see you. Been a minute.
It's been a little while. Even though it's not true. I mean, I've seen you from a distance because you're very busy.
Right. I did come over and say hi a week and a half ago.
You did. You came over and I was like, oh, my God, Austin Danforth. People must think I'm really cool. Because he came off that press table, came over, you know, and said hello to me. As I was like, looking at my press pass, which I'm just like, wow, look at this thing, man. This is so cool.
A week ago, it was Coach Brennan was that guy.
Oh, yeah.
Halftime, yeah. I sneak up there and say, hey, Coach, what's up?
Pretty cool stuff, man. Hey, listen, I've said many times on this radio show, and feel free to join the conversation, 655-6672 if you want to call us. You can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line at the exact same number, 802-655-6672. I've said for many times, when you watch baseball, football, basketball, any of the big sports that you care about, doesn't matter what it is, college basketball, college football, hockey, we keep changing. You know, social media has made us, I think, freak out. You know, as soon as somebody says something negative, you know, it's we jump in and we got to change it. You know, we have a bad call in the New Orleans game. you know, the New Orleans Rams game and the NFC Championship game. We have the non-pass interference call.
We can upgrade that to apocalyptically bad.
Yeah,
call.
And fair enough. And I didn't do the research to tell you that I can find another 10 calls that were terrible. And we get it was a terrible call. Yeah. But what really masks that is the terrible play calling by Sean Payton late in that game to even make that be an issue. I mean, that Sean Payton's one that screwed that game up. The official missed the call, but Sean Payton screwed the game up. Let's just call a spade here in terms of what it is. Okay, but this week, the NFL owners have approved a massive, basically, expansion of replay where, for 1 year, pass interferences, both offensive and defensive, will be reviewable. And more importantly, if a call is not made, now we can review that play. So if a pass interference call, like the call in New Orleans, if they deem that it's a pass interference call, you can review that now to see if it can be changed to a call. So even if you don't make the call, and it should have been a call, you can review it and make that and change the game and change the call. I think it's a ridiculous idea. I think it's a foolish idea. I think it's why even play defense in the NFL? I mean, there is offensive penalty. There is pass interference in every pass in football. Every pass, you can find something. And again, we can talk about this. Baseball's doing it with this pitch clock. They're doing it with the ridiculousness of a pitcher has to face at least three batters. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you have to get in the box. I mean, if you don't like the game of baseball, don't watch it. Don't watch it. The reality here is, when it comes to baseball, if your team is successful and your team is good, what happens? They come, right? They're going to come and watch.
Yeah.
If your team's bad, they're not going to come watch. If you're worried about people watching the game, put a good product on the field. Period. In the NFL, if you don't like the officiating and you don't like it, whatever. I mean, that's part of the game. It's been a part of the game forever, and now we're dumbing it down. People, 5 or 6 or 10 people sit in a room together. They all have the same ideas, and now we've got to implement this. I think it's a bad day for the NFL.
I didn't want to add to replay. There's enough replay. And the only thing I could have thought was like, if you could challenge a call or a no call, that I would have been okay with that. But if it's just a broad expansion of, we can look into that. That's not.
It's a foolish thing. It's not smart.
I'm just sitting here shaking my head.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, listen, and Aaron, go ahead. I'll give you your point. Go ahead.
Okay, so I know we're all freaking out because it seems like now every pass interference is going to get reviewed and it's going to slow the game down and it's not going to be interesting. We have to remember these coaches only get 2 challenges a game, and they're not allowed to challenge in the last 2 minutes of a half. So they have to very carefully consider whether they actually want to use this rule or not. It's got to be egregious, and it's got to be a situation where it's going to help save the game for them. It's not going to be something where they're like, oh, that looked like a pass interference to me. I'm going to throw this flag out real quick.
I see where you're coming from there, and I get, and I'm glad you gave that perspective to it, but I still don't care. I mean, I think that part of sport, listen, if you want to fix the problem, make this job, being an official, a full-time job. That this is what they do. And how about this? How about the officials have to be fit? Like, make them fit so they can keep up with the... I mean, these athletes that they have... I mean, I feel bad for officials in some capacities because how are you supposed to keep up with this? I mean, right. it's ridiculous how you keep up with these athletes.
And then so, they would rob us of those great NFL films, bloopers tapes from like the 80s and 90s where they get run over.
That's exactly the point. But that's what sport has become. You know, we've become, it's got to be perfect. Everything's like, I mean, bad officiating, and listen, I get on officials all the time, especially professional, in the professional end of things. You know, I think they need to be better. I mean, last night in the Duke game, in the Duke-Virginia Tech game, the last 6 seconds, I mean, if you saw it, Terry Blackshear, they shoot a three-pointer, try to win the game, the ball goes out of bounds. Terry Blackshear's foot is on the line. They save the ball, and 2 officials looking at it, they don't make the call. I mean, it gave Virginia Tech an opportunity to try to almost win that game.
I fell asleep last night.
Well, I mean, it's late. We'll talk about the times of these games later, too.
It's unusually early for me.
You wanted to be fresh for the show, too. You know. But so I understand that there's frustration there. But at the end of the day, like, you can't, this is part of the sport. And you just keep changing the game. I mean, Aaron's point is, if uses his point, like, you know, it's a situation, you haven't used a replay. There's, you know, you have a ball that's thrown, you know, a back shoulder ball that's under, or a quarterback makes a terrible throw. There's great coverage by the corner. The wide receiver comes back. It's an underthrown ball, and he bumps into him, and it's a no. Maybe the official deems that it's a no call because it was a terrible throw. It was a 50-50 situation. You have a flag come out. Now you got to look at it based by the rule. It's a pass interference. Now you don't have athletes being athletes. You're just, it's overkill. It's overkill when you cop talk about changing rules in major sports.
Well, for that specific example, I will say that they actually account for that in the pass interference rule. In pass interference, if the ball is deemed uncatchable, it's not a pass interference call no matter what the contact is. It can still be a legal contact potentially, but that has to be really blatant. So at least for that, there's
how many times have you seen balls that are so underthrown and the receiver goes back to the ball and runs in the corner and they call the flag on the corner?
Wasn't that how
it happens all the time?
That's how the Ravens move the ball the last two or three years with Flacco. They just he'd throw a deep ball and then hope for a pass interference.
I mean, that's a bad call because
they're called all the time, Aaron.
Like, the ref's not supposed to do that. But the ball's completely uncatchable.
Okay, but an uncatchable ball that's way over their head, but a 50-50 ball that's, you know, two guys going up for the ball. You know, the ball's still in play. It's coming down. And you got a cornerback running with a wide receiver who comes back to the ball, and the cornerback's momentum is going this way. Look at the ball. I mean, that can be deemed as pass interference.
Also, looking for the ball makes it not pass interference in most cases.
If you're looking for the ball. But again, it's judgment, Aaron. You're using judgment in this. Is it? We're talking about a situation where an official makes a judgment call like that, where he says, "Look, I deem that it was the contact had to happen or whatever." The official doesn't deem it's pass interference, but on the books, it is pass interference. So, big time in the game. It's late in the game. You throw the flag out. How are you going to not turn that over to pass interference?
Structurally, I'd be willing to make like structural changes to reviews and stuff like that. So like. Rather than being able to review more, I would rather give coaches each, say, a third chance to review something and have it be like with basketball, where college basketball, they change the timeout scenario.
Sure.
You get a use it or lose it timeout in the first half that, like, if you don't take it, you don't get to take it into the second half. So, okay, if it happens in the first half, they three of those three reviews, one would go away by halftime, whether you use it or not. I'm okay with that, and let them be able to challenge more things.
Sure.
But having an institutional review thing set up for certain, for more plays, I'm not on board with that.
Jan here on the text line texts, he says, we want the calls to be right though, which is fair. And Todd also texted, it's not a foolish rule. The refs have been botching pass interference for years, and it has been discussed long before the Saints game. I look at it as an opportunity to correct bad calls on defense when they call a 40-yard pass interference on a defense that didn't happen. Okay, fair enough. But how about we change the pass interference rules? How about you give the corners an opportunity to compete? I mean, we've turned the NFL into you can't get near the quarterback. You know, you can't touch the wide receiver. I mean, football is a contact. I'm not telling people have to get hurt, but I mean, at least make it fair. Aren't you, instead of doing this, where you're going to stop the game and we're going to have, and if what's the point of officiating? I mean, seriously, I mean, what's the point of it now? I mean, sometimes games are officiated differently. I mean, last night, if you watch NCAA tournament, last 10, 15 seconds of the game, players are going to the rim and they're getting bumped, but they're not making that call. Your people are competing. You know, I mean, that's the same type of situation. If you want to fix things, make it more fair for the other side. So if the offense, right now the NFL's an offense, would we all agree that it's all about offense? I mean, the defensive players are hamstrung in most capacities. I mean, there's so many things they can't do. Even things they have no control, or momentum situations. They're diving to make a sack and the quarterback has to go and he gets pushed in and the quarterback falls down, that's a flag. Why don't you make this more, make it more even so the defense can compete, and then you wouldn't have to worry about this stuff.
Young Aaron's hand is up.
I see.
Oh, I agree with you definitely on the defensive rule changes that they should tighten up on, because they have the defined quantifiable points for what pass interference is, but they don't always stick to them. They should tighten up on that. Sure. And illegal contact is kind of a dumb rule because it's a little bit of a bump on a route. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But I also think what makes it so it's still worth it to ref, even though they have this new rule, is that 95% of the calls are still going to stand. This is not something that's going to come up all the time.
No, okay, fair enough. And we'll see how it plays out. To me, the fact that if official makes a bad call or you deem it's pass interference, fair enough. I mean, and if you want to make it right, I can see the arguments. But to me, I just think it's just another check mark in the NFL side here. That's just kind of, it's creating to me, it's like almost unwatchable. Nothing's perfect in sports. I mean, it just isn't, you know, where everything's got to be right, perfect. All these calls have to be perfect. You know, we have to get the call right. You talk about that New Orleans game, and yes, it was atrocious non-call. But the play calling by Peyton was even worse than that call.
Agreed.
I mean, he had an opportunity. That game was over.
Yeah.
That game was over. And Sean Payton's play calling was. I mean, I think they're talking more. I think he wants to talk about this pass interference just to take away from the fact that his play calling was so poor. I mean, I just think every time that somebody we get too involved in a sport. The NFL is the greatest, is a huge sport for us, and everybody loves it. Not because of these new rules, because of what it's meant to the country. For as long as it's been around, it's built itself up because it's the game of football, not because there have been bad officials, not because the calls. We keep pushing, moving the goalposts on sports. Same thing's happening in baseball. I mean, I will always say, you're a Red Sox fan.
Yeah.
When the Red Sox are winning, there's nothing more fun for Red Sox fans. They're fired up. You're jacked up. I would say the same thing. A team like Kansas City, when they're winning, they're packing their stadium.
Right.
People are watching their product. And now we're talking about, oh, we got to speed the game. Nobody wants to watch it. Well, who doesn't want to watch it? If they love baseball, they're going to watch it. If they love football, they're going to watch it. If they love hockey, they're going
to
watch it.
Is this where I get to make my plug for the one rule change I've only ever wanted?
Yes, yes.
They keep messing with kickoffs and changing kickoffs. If you kick it through the uprights, it's a point.
That'd be cool.
Value the kickoff.
That'd be cool.
Add value to it.
That's a good idea.
Don't just boot it out for a touchback. If you can kick it through, that adds a point. Then when you get into Denver games, the betting lines go crazy because how many times can they kick it through at altitude? Sure. I mean, that's... Sure.
It also encourages teams to kick it deep instead of trying to pin it, which is where a lot of those injuries come in.
Yeah,
and
I mean...
It adds value to a position that is slowly being phased out.
If you want to do that, fine. That rule change, I'm good with. But when you start changing the sanity of the game, the sanctity of the game, and you're talking about, you know, we can throw flags out because that should have been a penalty, that shouldn't have been a penalty, that's when you lose me when it comes to sports. Leave these games alone. Let them be what they're going to be, and let's just enjoy this.
And the one point on the kickoff makes those penalties at the end on scoring plays worth even more, right?
Yeah,
right?
Of course.
Because then all of a sudden you're kicking off from the 40.
Austin Danforth, well done.
I mean, come on.
Listen, look at you. Well, you must have gotten some extra sleep.
I love this.
That's some extra sleep. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, it's out in left field. Don't go anywhere.
Get ready, because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
All right, Aaron, what do you got today, buddy?
I bumped a button.
You did.
Kangaroo rat thwarts rattlesnake attack in jaw-dropping fight sequence.
Oh, boy.
Newly released footage of desert kangaroo rats shows the cute creatures are able to foil snake attacks through a series of impressive moves. The findings appear in two newly published papers that analyze the behaviors and biomechanics of kangaroo rats and rattlesnakes. The research, which was done by a student-led team for UC Riverside, San Diego State University, and UC Davis, filmed encounters between the animals using high-speed cameras. In the process, the researchers learned that a rattlesnake can attack a rat in only 100 milliseconds, much less than the 150 milliseconds it takes for a human eye to blink. Despite the speed, researchers say that only half of the 32 snake-on-rat ambushes they recorded ended with a snake bite. This is because the kangaroo rat has a reaction time of 70 milliseconds, giving it a fighting chance to get away. Rats that responded quickly were frequently able to jump clear of the snake completely, leaving the serpent biting nothing but dust as the kangaroo rat rocketed 7 to 8 body lengths in the air, said Rulin Clark, an associate professor of biology at San Diego State. Okay, here we go. But in perhaps the most surprising finding of our research, kangaroo rats that did not react quickly enough to avoid the rat had another trick up their to avoid the strike had another trick up their sleeves. They often were able to avoid being envenomated by reorienting themselves in midair and using their massive haunches and feet to kick the snakes away ninja style.
Ayah.
That's crazy.
I'm watching this right now.
Yeah.
Oh man, crazy. This is nuts.
Well, listen. First of all, it's a great story. It's a great, you know, listen. Just because it looks like it's dire, the kangaroo rat, it can show you that you can get it done, even against a vile force like a rattlesnake attack. And like I've told you guys many times, when you get to the Super Bowl, the greatest upset in Super Bowl history I ever saw was my buddy's python against the rat that he put in, and the rat beat up the python. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. It was the greatest upset in Super Bowl history. It was the year that they played, the Patriots played the Panthers, like 2005 or 4 or whatever it was. And I hate snakes. Like, if anyone knows me, like, they're like, that's my phobia. I'm fearful of them. And he had a snake. And he's like, and everybody's there. There's like 20 of us there watching the game. He's like, I got to feed everybody. One thing. I'm like, I want to see it. And I'm like, I don't want to watch this. He puts the rat into the can, into the tank. The snake does its thing. It's, you know, it slithers up like they do. And it goes to get the, well, it bites the rat. Well, the rat pulls its head out of the snake's mouth and headbutts the snake, bites the snake. Snake turns around. My friend had to bring the rat back to the store. It wouldn't touch the rat. Now that is a success story right there, man. I mean, that's a rat that wasn't taking no for an answer. It was like, not today, pal.
Is that an Australian rat?
He's a Mighty Mouse. Mighty Mouse.
There's nothing, I don't think there's anything I've ever heard more badass than a rat going full Jackie Chan / Bruce Lee on a snake.
Well, there it is. Kangaroo rats do that. Good story there, man. That's interesting stuff. And I'm glad the rattlesnake didn't win because I just don't like snakes.
So the video I just watched when they're talking about like jumping 7 or 8 times its body length. I mean, everyone knows how big a rat is.
Sure.
This thing sprang.
It's like Zion.
It made Zion. Zion would be like, oh, man, I want to do that. Like, this, it was nuts.
Sports update time, kiddo.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation today. 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. I'm your host, Jeff Ball. Austin Danforth in the big seat to my right. Good to see you, my man.
Aloha.
Nice first hour there. Got a little, you know, got some emotion out. Talk some UVM hoops. Talk some Yankee baseball. Talked about the new rule changes in the NFL, which is ridiculous.
That got you fiery.
Oh, it's so annoying. And then people are shooting us on the text line. I'd love to be able to keep up with it, but there's been so many texts today. But, you know, these rule changes are ridiculous. But, listen, it is what it is. It's the NFL. I'm still going to watch. I just wish people would get out of my sports. Just the talking heads and these guys, they're smart and everybody else. Just stay out of the sports thing, okay? We're good. The sports are good. NCAA tournament. We are at the Elite Eight. Oh, man. I am anxious. My Cavaliers, my University of Virginia Cavaliers, are in the Elite Eight against Purdue. And as excited as I have been to watch this team and Tony Bennett's team do what they do, I think it's a pretty compelling Elite Eight. Would you agree?
Yeah.
UVA Purdue this afternoon. Gonzaga Texas Tech as well. And then tomorrow,
offense versus defense.
Yep. In both of those games. And I guess Purdue with what they did against Tennessee. I guess you could say they were an offensive juggernaut, but they kind of shot. They've had two games where they've had two players just literally go off and carry them right to victories twice. Obviously against Villanova, they had the kid get what shot? They had like 40-something
points. Yep.
And then on the other end of the spectrum, the kid from Indiana that couldn't miss against Tennessee in the second half. And mm-hmm. actually, Purdue blew an 18-point lead, actually kept Purdue in that game against a team in Tennessee that was coming and actually looked like they were going to win that game. And obviously, we've got Duke and Michigan State tomorrow, Kentucky and Auburn. So 8 pretty compelling teams still alive in this tournament.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be interesting. But again, there's different ways to get the job done. If I said to you, Austin Danforth, hey, what's the best way for me to get to Essex? You could tell me one way and Eric could tell me the other way. There's a lot of ways to get there.
I'm going
to
be right, but
your
point stands.
Exactly. But again, but then there's a guy like Stephen A. Smith from ESPN. And listen, however. So I get Stephen A.'s shtick. I there's a lot of things Stephen A. does that I like. I mean, I think he's funny. I used to listen to his show periodically. But then Stephen A. goes down this road, and it just shows me how lazy some journalists are. Go ahead, Aaron.
I'm calling you. I live outside of Charlotte. We had a good ACC tournament there in town this year, and I'm a little surprised that maybe Stephen A. didn't pick Virginia to at least be in that top four.
I don't want any parts of Virginia. I don't lie. Listen, they're a damn good team. They can beat anybody. But their defense carries them. Even though they've had some offensively impressive games this year, I'm not sold on them offensively. And I'll be honest with you, from an emotional perspective, I don't want to see them. I really, really don't. I think they make games ugly. I think they turn it into ugly encounters. Their game, their win against Oregon was a testament to that. They shoot 35% from the field, 27% from three-point range, and they still end up winning the game because they hold the team to 49 points. They win ugly, and that's not what I wish to see, so that might have played a role in my unwillingness to pick Virginia.
Nothing he just said is right. Nothing he just said is correct. I will say the same thing about the texter that was texting about UVM and their athletes, and they're not ready to win NCAA tournament. Sometimes you have to win games like that. But if this to me, and you're a journalist, Austin, and yep. I know how much research you do before anything you say, and I get that, you know, you can't follow everything, but to make that kind of a definitive remark about a basketball team that is one of the top 5 efficient offenses in the country against a team that's won 32 games, a team that won the ACC regular season, a team that has won 60-something games in the last 2 years, a team that does not get 5-star athletes, a team that does not get one-and-done athletes, a team that has to do what they do to be successful and does it well, a team that has to be fundamentally sound to do it well, and you're going to go out and say that they do it ugly? I mean, Stephen A., listen, I know you make a lot of money, and you got a big job, and you could care less about what one day a week sportscaster says about you in Burlington, Vermont. But that to me is a lazy, lazy, lazy out of a guy that people look up to and listen to and take what he says for real. I understand the Virginia game against Oregon was not a pretty basketball game. It wasn't like, oh my God, did you see that game? It was just survival. Two elite defenses, some tightness, missing some shots. I get all that.
So he probably thought the that Duke Butler championship game was just atrocious.
Or I wonder if he thought the Kentucky Houston game last night was atrocious. They were both in the 40s with 2 minutes to play. Mm. I mean, look, there are going to be games where you're going to score a lot of points and you're going to go up and down the floor. I get all that, but it's about doing what you do successful to win. And when you and winning is not ugly. I mean, especially in the tournament, survive and move on. And when you look at the athletes that Virginia's putting on the floor, I mean, they shouldn't be competing with any of these teams. Virginia's athletes aren't the Duke athletes, the North Carolina athletes, the Kentucky. I mean, I'm so sick of the quote-unquote blue blood. It's good to see a team like Purdue in this, Virginia in this, Texas Tech in this. I think even seeing a team like Auburn in this. These are programs that are up and coming, that have good coaches, that have developed their programs. What Stephen A. Smith did to me is atrocious. It's terrible. I wish I had his vocabulary, because he's got some great vocabulary words I like to throw out there, but I'm not smart enough.
Well, Virginia is ugly on defense because that's what good defense looks like
but
in that's basketball.
Not, but it's not ugly. It's not ugly. It's brilliant. I mean, what Tony Bennett has done at Virginia, how he teaches the pack line, is brilliant. So don't say it's ugly.
No, I was going to make a point.
Okay, go ahead.
That good basketball defense makes offense look ugly, and sure. That's the point.
Because, okay, that's a good
because
point.
Because basketball offense is about flow. It's music. It's melody. It's motion. It's things coming together to make an open shot happen.
Sure.
And defense is blowing that up. That's the whole point. So, of course, it looks ugly on defense. That's the point. And if they played a really good defense that made their offense look ugly for one game, that doesn't necessarily mean that they play ugly all around all
sure.
the time.
I mean, and again, I'm in my defense to Virginia, and I get salty with this because, you know, I get a little salty with this. Because here's the thing. Here's the thing. You know, when you look at a program like Virginia that plays in the ACC, and what do you got in the ACC? Think about the programs in the ACC. Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Syracuse. I mean, these. Mm-hmm. Just name four of them. I mean, we're not talking about the NC States and the. There's a lot of ACC blue bloods in there.
Florida State.
I mean, there's a lot of talent in there, and when you're competing in recruiting with those guys, I mean, I can remember when Louisville and Syracuse came into the conference thinking, how is my team ever going to do anything?
Yeah.
And what Bennett has done and how he has prepared his players. And I would say this, I would even rival, and I know you're probably going to laugh at me at this. I think if you go to Tony Bennett's program and stay for 4 years, you're better prepared for the NBA than you are with Mike Krzyzewski. I mean, the last 15 years, name one impact player besides Kyrie Irving that's left Duke that's been the big time star in the NBA. Name one.
Oh boy.
I mean,
Jabari Parker, no.
Right. Okafor, no.
Okafor, no. I mean,
McGeady, no. I mean, I can go.
McGeady was the first one that left early.
Winston, no. He's out of Miami.
Yeah. No, you're right, though.
And you look at what Malcolm Brogdon, what he's doing with Milwaukee. You look at Joe Harris, what he's doing with the Nets. If Justin Anderson stayed two more years at Virginia, he'd be a better pro.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just talking about.
I covered him in high school.
Justin Anderson?
He was a freshman.
Oh, no kidding.
He looked pretty much the same.
Yeah. Well, I bet he was a star there then.
Yeah.
But my point is, and people that listen don't know Virginia up here, and I get all that. But when I hear Stephen A. Smith go out and like blast a program, I don't want to see them. They're bad for basketball. The way they play is ugly. You have no idea what you're talking about. If you can relate to this, you watch UVM play. If UVM was going to beat Florida State, they had to be tight in their fundamentals. They had to be sound in what they were doing. And for the majority of the game, they were, and that's why they were in that game to win.
And that's what the rest of the America East, with maybe the exception of Hartford, which doesn't really play a ton of defense and just, you know, they're going to make a lot of threes
right.
on you. Albany's recipe to beat UVM over the years has been keep it in the 50s or lower. Like
yep.
just slow it down, junk it up, make it ugly, make it uncomfortable. UMBC, when they beat UVM, it was... they needed to defend the hell out of UVM
right,
because
right.
UVM is a better team.
Right.
The problem with Stephen A. Smith, I mean, he's the one of the two or three most people profited the most from the sports take industrial complex.
Sure.
He can be as lazy as he wants, and he it if, as far as business goes, it's good for business because he gets people wearing Cavalier orange like you, riled up.
It's not just because I'm wearing Cavalier orange. It's not because of that.
But
don't you think that don't you have to have some type of integrity to say,
I'd like to think that
I didn't like the way it looked. I mean, I wouldn't get on here and say, like, let's look at North Carolina last night.
I like to make jokes about your team.
Sure, and you do. You're not the only one.
First one to 50 wins, and that like it's not wrong, but it's like it's there's truth in every bit of kidding. I think if you want to take any sort of substantial argument against Virginia, I think in games like as UMBC showed, and they're not the only team that does it, but like when you play a style that limits the amount of points that can be scored in a game, and it's because of the way they play offense and defense, you automatically get the other team closer to that ceiling.
But I get what you're saying. And last year's game against UMBC was a completely different team. You're talking about a team that was one of the last teams in the country in terms of offensive efficiency. I'm not saying that their style couldn't be a detriment at times. I mean, we all get that. I mean, if Virginia goes down 15 points today, I mean, that might be tough for them. They're not used to playing an up and down game. But this team is different than that. And when you go on national radio and you make these ridiculous statements, and again, this is the world we live in. We live in the social media world, where it doesn't matter what you say, because it's not really about what you say. It's what if people want to hear you. People want to argue with you. If I'm talking about Stephen A. up here in Burlington, Vermont, that's a good thing. If there are Virginia fans all over the country on Twitter ripping them up, it's a good thing for business.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, you're a reporter, you're an award-winning reporter, I think there needs to be some journalistic integrity in what you say. You may not have liked the way Virginia played against Oregon. Fair enough. They didn't play well offensively. But let me tell you something right now. That team locked. They knew they weren't playing great offensively, and they locked down defensively and gave them a chance to win. And when the game was on the line, they made the shots they had to win the basketball game. That's how you win championships. It's just simple as that.
We also have to keep in mind that Stephen A. Smith's specialty is the NBA, which is a very different brand of basketball.
He shouldn't even engage, like, honestly. But yeah. So like, yes, he is invested in a form of basketball that does not prioritize defense.
Nope.
That's why I like college basketball for the same reasons he seemingly can't stand it. I love that variation. You could get, you know, last night Auburn scores. Did they get to 90?
Auburn. Yeah, but that was my.
So I love that spectrum. I love that there are so many ways to win a basketball game.
And when you look at North Carolina, one of the hottest teams going into the NCAA tournament, I think a team that rolled basically through the first two rounds going into the mm-hmm. Sweet 16, and they got beat yesterday, not because Auburn was so good. It wasn't because Auburn is some elite team. I've got some friends that are friends of mine from North Carolina that were like, well, you know, if Auburn shoots like that, they're going to win a championship. It has nothing to do with them shooting that way. You didn't play any defense. North Carolina didn't want to play defense. They just wanted to run up and down the floor as fast as they could, take quick shots. That wasn't winning championship basketball. You got to play both ends. And if you're not going to play one end, and if you're not doing it offensively, and North Carolina got cold early in the second half, you got to turn it up on the other end. And that's what makes this Virginia team, to me, such a special team, because they are efficient offensively. You didn't see it. Listen, this tournament, Kyle Guy and DeAndre Hunter, Kyle Guy, one of the best three-point, I think he's the best three, I think he ranks like one or two in the three-point efficiency in the country, and I think he was number one in the ACC, and DeAndre Hunter, they're talking about, is going to be a number five pick in the draft. If those two guys turn around and play their games, this team's going to beat everybody. Yeah. Those two guys have not played well in this tournament so far, but they found ways to win the game.
I got something that'll cheer you up.
Go ahead.
R.E. Stephen A. Smith,
yeah,
and ESPN and the Take Industrial Complex. I got a game I play when I turn on my TV. If my roommate has left it on ESPN and I wake up in the morning, the game is, how quickly can I get the TV off of ESPN?
Oh, yeah, I agree with you.
It's unwatchable. It is. I can't stand it.
Yeah.
It diminishes the work of the people in my business.
Sure.
It's incredibly infuriating. So I just don't engage.
No, I don't either. And it's funny, you know, I the only reason I saw this is because I had ESPN on in the restaurant at Ramonto's, and I had the volume down, but I saw Jay Billis was on, and Jay Billis was trying to stick up for him a little bit, you know, but he doesn't want to hear it. And again, at the end of the day, it's just frustrating for me to look at a program. And I think it's a program that you'd want to root for. You know, you got a guy in Tony Bennett that's one of the, I think he's the best coach in the nation. I truly do. And I'll debate anybody on that in terms of developing players. A team that lost to a 16 seed last year. I mean, just, they've been smoked. No, I'll tell you, they got smoked. But to overcome that, for a program like Virginia to over, and I know they're not, somebody just said, Todd said, they're not the sisters of the poor here. I get all that. I know that they're one of the top programs, but they've come from being the bottom feeders of the ACC with Tony Bennett 10 years ago. He's developed them into one of the really power programs in the country, and that's not because they're getting the best kids. And I know he's got decent talent. He brings in top 100 athletes. They all do.
Right.
But what he does and how he teaches these kids with the types of players they're getting in here is special. I think it's a team that's easy to root for. I think Texas Tech's a team that's easy to root for. I think Purdue's a team that's easy to root for.
I've always felt like there's a lot of similarities between the way UVA is set up under Bennett and the principles that UVM has with John Becker. UVM almost never gets out in transition, with the exception of when they had Trey Bell Haynes.
Yep.
And occasionally now with Steph Smith, if there's some sort of defensive play at the top of the key. But when you're a team that focuses on rebounding, or when you're Virginia and you focus on packing the lane so teams have to beat you from outside, you're never going to get up and down and score a ton of points. You're just too far anchored away from your hoop.
That's true.
It's just the way it is. You're focused on, in Virginia's case, stops and getting the ball like out of the paint.
Yep.
In Vermont's case, you're focused on getting the ball back and then going to work at picking people apart offensively. That's the way it goes.
Very true. Very true. So. You're 100% right. Stephen A., you're wrong, buddy.
Stephen A. is also, I've heard, a closet UNC fan. So
probably. A team doesn't play any defense.
Stephen A.'s wrong, but he's probably spending his morning warming up, burning $100 bills.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, what did like a turkey vulture fly into his office at ESPN a couple weeks ago?
Or something like that? Last week,
He's got this big, beautiful office. So who am I? You know what I mean? I'm just, you know, who cares? But I got to tell you, man, I just think there needs to be some integrity in some of these guys. At least do some research. Like, I don't care if you don't like them, but don't say things that are stupid.
Entertainment does come before journalism in the ESPN's name. It's the very first word.
True. That's true. That's very true.
Journalism's not even in there.
Hey, before we go to break, what's our poll question? What's your favorite sports season? You can go to 1013 The Game on Twitter and answer. What do we got so far, bub?
40% says NFL, 5% says NBA, 35% says NHL, and 20% say MLB.
All right, we'll be right back. A little Ian Levy, NBA insider, when we come back. Don't go anywhere.
Getting you ready for game day. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
I want to give my beautiful wife Monica a shout out, Austin. She had some knee surgery this week. But it just tells me, like, I've been doing this show for so long, she could care less that I'm on the radio now. Like, she's been texting me pictures of, like, where's the mop? Where's this? Where's the broom? I'm like, I'm in the middle of doing a radio show here. I can't respond to this. Do you like this? Because she wants to get, like, something for our patio. Like, do you like this? I haven't answered.
Sounds
She's like, why
aren't
you answering me?
Crazy.
Oh, my goodness. She doesn't even care. But I don't know where the broom is. If you're listening, I don't know where the broom is because I've never seen the broom. I don't even know what a broom is. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe there's one in the garage, but that's all I know.
Could you draw a picture of a broom if on the spot?
Yeah, I don't know. She's like, something about a long broom. I don't even know what a long... I've never had a long broom. Don't know where it is. All right, let's move on here to the NBA. Listen, NBA editor for fansided.com, our good friend Ian Levy joins us now on the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Good morning, Ian. What's happening?
Not much. Enjoying some basketball.
Yeah, listen, do you follow the NCAA tournament as well? You enjoying that so far?
I do. I don't watch as much, sort of in the build-up to the regular season, but the tournament is, can't miss.
Sure.
It's been a lot of fun.
All right, let's start with the Eastern Conference. I guess the team that's near and dear to everybody's heart around here is the Boston Celtics. Got a win last night against Indiana, a big win for the Celtics. They've gotten themselves to into the four spot. What's your take on the Celtics right now?
I think they're in a tough spot. It seems like the issues are chemistry. There's some execution issues. There's some guys whose shooting percentages are down compared to last year. There's some, some sets and things like that aren't working, the way they did last year when they were really on that run. But, I think you can attribute a lot of it to chemistry and Kyrie Irving has sort of been all over the place with his comments, this year, committing to the team and then sort of backing off of that. There's been times where it seems like he's criticizing Stevens. There's been times where it seems like he's, subtly taking jabs at different teammates. And, I think you can just sort of see that permeating everything they're doing on the court.
Pretty enduring quality for a guy that wants to play for big money next year somewhere else. I mean, again, that's where I wanted to get to with this. I mean, he when he came out and said he's going to take the LeBron James guide to leading a team, I knew immediately the Celtics were in trouble.
Yeah, I think we've seen with LA that playbook is not necessarily infallible.
I mean, Brad Stevens is one of the best, if not the best coach in the league. in terms of what he's been able to do at Boston. I mean, when you didn't have this superstar running around like Kyrie Irving, I mean, what this Celtic team was doing was special. And now we have this problem because there's prima donna running around in on the parquet in Boston. I think it's a shame what's happened there.
Yeah, I think it's hard, and you wonder about how it's going to affect young guys. Jaylen Brown has kind of had a difficult year by the numbers, and Jason Tatum, it's sort of hard because development is often not linear, and you see a guy like that have a great rookie season, and you assume that year two is just going to be whatever they did as a rookie plus X amount of growth, and often guys sort of waver up and down in those first couple of years, and they'll have stretches where they look fantastic, and stretches where they look like a rookie again. You watch those guys, and it'll be interesting to see what the trajectory is for them the next couple of years. Whether they're both here with Kyrie next year, whether they're here without Kyrie next year, or whether they end up, as a part of some trade for Anthony Davis or whoever, and they end up somewhere else in a different environment. We, get to see their development in a different context.
Yeah. That discord, it's so off-putting, confusing. You keep picking adjectives, but like that happens. And then all of a sudden you get the door opens up for what's happened in Milwaukee this year, which is pretty crazy to go from last year, the seven seed, to, top of the standings in the East. And yeah, are they, I mean, in your estimation, are they the favorites going into the playoffs here to represent the East?
Well, they certainly should be statistically. I mean, they've been head and shoulders ahead of anybody in the East. And, again, by the numbers, they've been far better than Golden State has this year. And, if you're just sort of taking the regular season at face value, I think you'd have to say they're the overwhelming favorites going into the playoffs. But obviously, we know Golden State has another gear, and you never sort of know when they're going to hit it. I think Milwaukee is they really illustrate that value of chemistry, and maybe not necessarily, 12 guys who are best friends, but the idea of everybody having a role, their role being defined, everybody understanding that role, being willing to play that role, and everybody sort of moving in the same direction when they're on the court. Even the times when they're struggling, nobody has any question about what their role is with the team for the rest of the year, and what they're supposed to do on the next possession and in the next quarter and the next game. Those jobs are just sort of so well defined, and such a nice match for the player skills on that team. And one of the other things compared to Boston is so much of the hope and optimism about Boston this year was about the development of players like Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and about them taking their games to the next level. And, Milwaukee by and large doesn't have to worry about that. Their best players are maybe still on the young side of their primes, but they're not relying on second and third year guys to take this huge leap. Giannis is what he is at this point. You've got, veterans like Eric Bledsoe and Brooke Lopez and Chris Middleton, playing these defined roles. So there was not as much sort of question mark. There was how the team was going to fit together and how all these pieces could sort of elevate each other in the new system. But there wasn't a lot of question about what everybody's ceiling was going to be this year.
And Giannis, being the superstar, is being what he should be as a superstar. I mean, he's adaptable. He's working with his guys. He's not demeaning them like Kyrie's doing. I mean, mm-hmm. I think when you have a superstar that buys in like this, I mean, that's when you can be special. And that's the sad part about what's going on with Boston right now. All right, let's move this over to the Western side of things. Golden State loses a tough one last night. Is it still theirs to lose?
Yeah, I think so. Their ceiling is just so much higher than anybody else's, in the league. They can, they can be at 70-75% of their best and still blow other teams out of the water. And, obviously we're not seeing it as much. Clearly there's some chemistry issues there as well. They're not in the same rhythm they've been in, but they don't have to beat everybody. A lot of the other teams, you look at them and they can say, well, they can win the title if everything breaks their way. They can win the title if they really all get going in the same direction. And Golden State can kind of be a mess and still just out talent teams, unfortunately.
Do you look at this team and kind of think they've been there, done that with the great records, and that they just want to get to the playoffs? They're one of those teams that they're just trying to get themselves healthy and get themselves to the playoffs.
Oh, clearly. And I think, you know, as much as I hate to say it, I think the specter of Durant's free agency is weighing on them. And, you know, I certainly don't have any inside information, but it certainly, you know, the read from the outside, it certainly looks like Durant's going to be gone next year. And I think some of it is those guys, Steph and Clay and Draymond, just wanting to get through to the other side. You know, obviously they'd like to win, they'd like to win another title this year and sort of add to their legacy. But I think there's some degree of, you know, we want to get to the other side and start figuring out what we're going to be, you know, in the next era of this team.
Why would I just don't understand this with Durant. I never understood it with LeBron. Like, what is the purpose of leaving? I mean, don't you want the guys like Durant, LeBron, don't you want legacies to be that I did it with these guys and I'm staying here and this is what we're going to build around me and this is going to be my home? And I mean, I times are different now, I guess. I mean, in the 90s, Jordan would have never done that. Magic would have never done that. You know, Dr. J would have never done that. Larry would have never done that. I just don't get these elite players just jumping ship every few years. I don't get this.
Yeah, I don't know. I think some of it is seeing other people doing it and realizing that, I think for a long time there was a sense that wherever you sort of ended up as a rookie, wherever you sort of started your career, that was your spot. That was where you sort of had to make your home. And now you see these guys sort of move around, and I think quality of life is a factor in these decisions in a way that it wasn't for Michael Jordan or Larry Bird. You know, maybe Michael Jordan liked living in Chicago, but you know, if Charlotte was an option, maybe he would have preferred living in Charlotte and sort of being in that environment, the weather being nicer. And but I think that sort of just wasn't on the table in the same way. And so, you know, for a guy like Durant, I think, you know, this appeal of, you know, I can go to New York City and I can live in New York City and I can have a certain life off the court in New York City that I, you know, can't have in Golden State. I think that's part of it, you know, for better or worse. And to the legacy question, I think Durant probably is less constrained by that than some of these other stars, because his legacy, sort of got shredded when he went to Golden State. You know, going there and winning those two rings, I think for a lot of people, you know, didn't really add to his legacy at all. You know, it's like, well, obviously he got two or three rings if they win another one this year. You know, he went to the best team with two of the other best shooters ever. And so, you know, it might actually help his legacy to go somewhere else and sort of, you know, try and build something up again from the ground up and get back to championship contention with a new group of players.
And what could have happened if he stayed in Oklahoma City? If Harden stayed there and he stayed there, with the dynamic there, that could have been a special team. I'm surprised that broke up.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, the Harden, the Harden thing was about money, was about choosing between Harden and Ibaka and feeling like they could only afford to keep one of those guys. And if you're going to keep one, I think, you know, if you asked them at the time, I'm sure they probably would have said in a vacuum, Harden's going to be the better player. But we already have Durant and Westbrook. And if we can only keep one, we need Ibaka more than we need Harden, because he offers different things. You know, he offers interior defense and rebounding. And so, you know, that decision will always, you know, will always kind of look a little bit shaky. But, it's crazy to imagine, you know, that those three guys were all on the same team together.
Well, and so, getting back to we've talked up Golden State a little bit here. The way the standings currently look, I'm looking, and as stacked as the West is, Golden State, Oklahoma City is a possible first round matchup. Like, that's why the 1-8, that's wild. And then you look, if Houston stays in that 4-5 game, you could have Durant have to go through both of his old running mates just to get to the Western Conference final. I mean, is there any chance in that scenario? I mean, it seems ripe for something crazy to happen to Golden State.
Yeah, it's funny when you look at that field and sort of the dynamics of somebody challenging Golden State. I think you'd have to look at their team and say they're, you know, just internally, they're probably more vulnerable than they've been in other years. They've not been as solid during the regular season. They look a little more disjointed. They have this chemistry cloud kind of hanging over them. But I think you could also look at them and say, well, Houston was clearly much better last year than they were this year, and much, much more prepared to challenge Golden State last year. Oklahoma City, Paul George has been, you know, a fringe MVP candidate. This is probably the best version of the team that they've had since Durant left. But I'm not sure that they're really up to challenging Golden State at their ceiling. And last year you had Portland, who looked like maybe they were, kind of prepared to challenge that. You know, they're clearly not without Jusuf Nurkić. And Golden State, I think, has taken a step back, maybe a slight step back this year. But I think the rest of those elite teams in the West are probably, less prepared to take advantage than they have been in other years.
All right, Ian, so you think it's going to be chocolate? We only have a couple minutes left. You think, if you had to make a prediction, we're going to see in the NBA Finals, what's your prediction?
I think probably we end up with Golden State and Milwaukee.
Good. Do you think that's a good matchup? I mean, do you think that'll be a quality final? You think that's the kind of matchup we need?
I think it'll certainly be interesting. I mean, I know there'll be hand-wringing about Milwaukee and being a small market team and not sort of having a national appeal, but I think I think the people who worry about those sorts of things misunderstand how compelling Giannis is and how compelling he will be on that stage. And the Bucks, for whatever, not having the legacy of some of these other more exciting teams, they play a really, really fun style of play this year, this wide-open three-point heavy offense. And they have the pieces to make that really competitive. Even if Golden State kicks it up, I think Milwaukee's probably as prepared as anyone to sort of match up with them and try and keep it even. So it should be a really competitive series, and it should, aesthetically be a fun series to watch.
Yeah, those are the people that would complain about Milwaukee not having the sex appeal of being the Milwaukee, or the people that sit in rooms and screw up the NFL rules and screw up the Major League Baseball rules. Those are the people I don't like. Those are the people that have to stay out of sports. Those are the people that have to kick them out. We can't have those people anymore, Ian. I want them out of sports.
Yeah.
All right, man. Listen, have a great day. We appreciate your insight. We'll talk to you when we get closer to the playoffs, all right?
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, man. NBA editor for Fansided.com, Ian Levy. Always fun to talk to him. He's got great insight. And obviously, look, if you're looking at it on paper, Milwaukee and Golden State. And by the way, I'm just saying, you know who plays for Milwaukee?
Your boy.
My boy, Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah.
I mean, again, he was only the NBA Rookie of the Year last year, 4 years at UVA. Just saying.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm all in for Milwaukee.
Yeah, I'm not a big NBA guy.
Yeah.
As we talked about.
Sure.
I prefer college basketball.
I'm with
over
you. 100%.
But like, even from my withdrawn perspective, like, Giannis is
awesome.
Like, I'm still intrigued by him.
He's a perfect superstar.
If you throw him in a finals matchup against Golden State, like, that's easy. That's T-ball for Mark.
And how about ridiculousness of what Kyrie's done to the Boston Celtics and Brad Stevens as a coach and these young kids that they're trying to develop and what Danny Ainge built there with that young talent, that young coach. Kyrie Irving went in there and just took a sledgehammer to it, just like LeBron James does.
If you're rowing a boat and you got five people rowing and one of them decides they want to row in a different direction.
Yeah, but only when it's bad. Only when the rivers are bad. I mean, he'll row with you when it's all good. But as soon as you get a little trepidation, you get a little thunderstorm, he's out.
You got four people rowing in the right direction. You're still not going to catch the people that have five people rowing in the right direction.
So. Don't blame Danny Ainge. Don't blame Brad Stevens. Don't blame anybody but Kyrie Irving. He's the problem. Just like LeBron is. Just saying. All right, take a quick break when we come back. It's Hot or Not. Don't go anywhere.
I wouldn't bother with those winter coats because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's time for Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
I love this text line. The Town Fair Tire text line. You can join it too, by the way, 655-6672. Todd says, maybe the people who say you people should be kicked out of sports should be kicked out of sports. Are you referring to me, Todd? You think I should be kicked out of sports?
I think people need to know you can text emojis to that and they show up.
Oh, you can.
Up.
That's right. They do. That's right. You did that one time.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is I'm sick of people, the talking heads that sit in rooms and make decisions on games and sports that have been around for years and years and are successful. I just don't, I'm done with that stuff. These new rules in the NFL, the new rules in baseball. I'm not saying they should be kicked out of the game. I'm just saying, like, let's just, like,
cancel them for momentarily.
Let's just pump the brakes and let these sports be sports. That's all I'm saying.
I think there can be a disconnect between differences in ideologies as fans or as people in the game and people who make changes to the game. Because a lot of people, some people agree with these changes, and the response they get is, well, you're not a real sports fan. Whereas, really...
Who's saying that? No one's saying you're not a real sports fan.
Well,
I'm just kidding.
No, you're not, but it happens. I think it makes people defensive about these things.
Sure, gotcha. All right, listen, this is our time, man. Hot or not, go ahead, kiddo.
All right, Hot or Not is brought to you by Superb Cupcakes in Williston. Stop by Superb Cupcakes in the Taft Corner Shopping Center in Williston for the best cupcakes around. They will not disappoint, offering over 100 flavors of regular and mini cupcakes made from scratch daily. No box mix here. Make your day superb.
And if you haven't had a Superb Cupcake yet, you're really missing the boat on this. I mean,
seriously.
I mean, if first of all, the cupcakes are spectacular, but if you're looking for some crazy flavors of cupcakes, like just like you walk in and you say, oh my God, you have a cupcake that tastes like that. That's what Superb Cupcakes is. It really is a great place owned by two spectacular people. I mean, I'm not a big fan of who they love in, you know, football. You know, they're big Eagles fans. You know what I mean? Which is rough. It's rough to be an Eagles fan. But they're Yankee fans, so they're a half all right. So you know. But go on and check them out in the Taft Corner Shopping Center. Superb Cupcakes are our sponsor for this, and they are awesome, awesome cupcakes.
The Red Sox starting rotation struggles are a concern for Boston fans.
Okay, I'm going to say not because we're in March. Okay, I'll say that. I will say that. But I think there has got to be. I think I can see where there'd be a little bit of like concern just based on the fact that Chris Sale had the injury issue going into last season. There was some concern there. They signed him to a big extension, which we just saw right before the season started. He really struggled the first time out. Nathan Eovaldi last night was, I think, Nathan Eovaldi. I think that's who he Nathan Eovaldi. Is, but I think it's way too early to hit the panic button on the defending champion World Series Red Sox.
It's March. Yeah.
We
shouldn't play baseball in March. Period.
But Red
so
Sox
I'm not going to get worried in March.
See where the Red Sox fan has evolved to though, because if this was pre 2004, they'd be calling for Cora to be fired. They'd be freaking out on Dombrowski. But now that you guys are like living in the fat city, relax, it's just March, we're fine. But, you know, trust me, 15 years ago, this would have been a very ugly time in Boston.
If we end up being like 3-17 and the staff ERA is like 7.2,
sure.
Okay, then let's be worried.
But I know, of course, that's that point. But come on, man. Like you guys, you know, Patriot and Red Sox fans have been living on the hog for the last like 10 years. Just living life. Look at you. Look at Austin.
My complexion is great, isn't it?
It is. You look good.
Well, it depends. Some of them stress over everything anyway. For example, own Rich Haskell, who has to hold his breath every time anything happens in a Red Sox or Patriots game, even though they're constantly relevant teams.
Rich is my kind of fan, though. He's just like me. Like, that's how I am. I mean, you're stressed out all the time. I'm a little stressed out with the Yanks. I mean, I don't like Chapman's velocity down. I don't like Dellin's velocity down. I don't like shoulder problems with Severino. I mean, I'm anxious. I'm anxious. And the Red Sox are always good, so it stinks when that happens. If you're a Yankee fan, the Sox are great. It's no fun. You know what I mean? I know people like the rivalry. Yeah, I mean, for you. Okay, there he is.
What do we got next?
All right. With their struggles in the last two rounds, Duke will not make it out of the Elite Eight.
I'll buy that. I'm hot on that. Yeah.
See, I'm going to say, yeah. I mean, you want to elaborate on why you think?
They nearly got overtaken late. Last night, they got by the
what was the Virginia,
hair on their
what
chinny
was the
chin
Virginia Tech
against,
kid doing anyway? I mean, it was I don't know if he realized he had more time.
Yeah,
crazy.
I admitted to falling asleep when I spent the morning getting back up to speed on what I missed. It was it's a head scratcher. But the they had no business winning the UCF game the way UCF played
Very
the
true.
Last 7 minutes.
Very true.
Nuts.
Very true.
So they're gettable. I mean, I don't know if anybody can stop Zion, but okay.
The way you beat the Duke Blue Devils is simple. You got to do it because they're great athletes, but you got to pack the paint, you got to make them shoot, and you got to take care of the ball. You do those three things, you really got a good chance to win. I will just say, I'm going to say when things like this happen with teams, like the fact that they didn't tip the ball in against UCF, you know, the fact that, you know, the Virginia Tech kid misses a little layup to get the tie of the game to go to overtime, those are kind of things that happen to teams that are kind of destined. And you have the best player. I don't know if Michigan State, people are really on Michigan State. They seem to think this is the team that can knock Duke off. I don't know if Michigan State has that type of game to play 40 minutes.
They looked good yesterday, though.
They looked good yesterday, but I got to tell you, man, unless they have the ability to do that, I just can't imagine Duke not being at least in the Final Four.
They owned Michigan State owned my Wolverines this year.
It's true.
And Michigan
true.
Had like one of the top five defenses in America.
It's true. Yeah, so, Michigan State's a great team and very well coached. We get all that.
And in that, you know, early scares survive in advance mentality, Auburn right there.
Oh, yeah, they're a perfect example. Yeah, but Auburn, I think Duke is kind of on a, I don't know, they're on a roll. Things are happening for them.
They're fighting history. No team has ever been that bad from three-point range.
It's very true.
And won it all.
That's very true. And UCF, I'll tell you, as well as they played down the stretch, some of the decisions they made with the last 25 seconds of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as soon as Zion touched the paint when the and one happened, I would have told Taco, hey, man, if that guy touches the paint, you tackle him. Because if he makes... first of all, we don't want you on the floor because it's going to be a free throw game from that, but we don't want you on the floor for that right. game, so might as well foul out. And if he makes both of them, we're still up by one, you know, and they didn't do that. It was a hard foul, but it wasn't hard enough to make him not get the ball over the rim. And you saw what happened at the end of the game. And obviously, missing the alley-oop, UCF had that opportunity. Yeah. Maybe if they pull the ball back, there's all these things that could have happened. But, hey, man, sometimes, you know, Duke's on a roll. They're having things happen for them. It's Duke. We'll see. I don't know if Michigan State matches up well, but we'll see.
All right. In light of the offer Buzz Williams got from Texas A&M,
yep.
college coaches should not pick money over loyalty.
So I don't know if you heard this morning. Texas A&M has offered Virginia Tech coach $3.5 million to go coach Texas Tech. Or Texas A&M. I'm sorry, not Texas A&M. You know, I can't imagine why, if you're Buzz Williams, you leave Marquette, a really good program, to go to Virginia Tech. You've built Virginia Tech to a perennial powerhouse in the ACC. They are one of the best teams in the nation. You're in an Elite Eight game, and you're down to basically missing a bunny layup to send mm-hmm. it to overtime. You could be looking at the Elite Eight tomorrow as well. You've built it up, and now you're going to go leave and go to another program. Like, I just don't understand why you'd want to leave. You know, I've never understood this. So I'm going to say, I'm going to say hot that the coaches are wrong. Yeah, I'm going to say hot on that. I think they are wrong to leave. I think if Mike Krzyzewski left Duke, you know, back when he got to Duke the first few years when they were struggling, and, you know, Duke wouldn't be Duke today. You know, right. I think you get to a school, you're having success, keep building it. Why do you want to start all over again?
I think the only thing that would get me there was it's probably like he's going to have a better chance for success maybe year over year at A&M, like, because you're just not dealing with that ACC hoops meat grinder where you got to see UNC, Duke. You rattle off five teams that you got to see, you know, multiple times a year. That would be it. But like Buzz Williams has a really compelling backstory. And he came from nothing. Like,
sure.
it's really wild.
And he's a great ambassador of the game. Like, Buzz Williams is one of the good guys.
So I'm rooting for him, whatever he does. But like, that's, I feel like he would stay, but who knows?
I don't know. And I mean, I hope he goes, being a Virginia fan. I don't know.
True, yeah, yeah.
The way he recruits, these players are awesome.
Sorry I didn't include Virginia in that like list of...
Yeah, no, I wrote that down.
I saw the pen moving.
That's a check on the other
side.
Yeah,
okay. My bad.
It's completely ridiculous for the MLB to start their season this early in the year.
Yes, hot, fuego. all the fire emojis, give them to me. I'm of the mind where, like, let's get through March Madness before we start thinking about baseball. I think we had one of my coworkers in the Free Press news reporter was saying, why are there multiple sports happening at the same time? Why is there golf and baseball and basketball? It's like, there's hockey too. Sports fatigue is real. Even for people who like sports.
Okay, so that's a journalistic take on it. As a fan, I'm all in. Start whenever you want. I want to watch games. I want to be able to come home at night at 7 o'clock and know that I can watch my favorite team if they're on. I want to be able to do that. I know it's a little bit early and it's very difficult weather-wise. I get all that stuff. But baseball season is a special time. I know it's a long, long season, but I'm glad it's back. I mean, I'm ready to go, so I'm glad it's back.
Okay.
Fan heckling is out of control in pro sports.
Wow. I'm going to say hot. I mean, it obviously is. And I think a lot of that has to do with the social media world in terms of, I think, because you take it away from the stadium and you take it into a personal life. I think that some of the things that come out of people's mouths are rough. I mean, some of the things that people say to people are terrible, but I think it's part of it. I think heckling has been part of it. I think when heckling, it's kind of one of those things where it depends on what type of heckling we're talking about. If we're talking about a guy that says, you stink, get out of here, nobody likes you, that's one thing. If you start going after their family, their wife, their kids, I think there's two different sides to the spectrum.
Is there something I missed before I answer this question recently?
So the Celtics fan who was accused of yelling the N-word at DeMarcus Cousins has been banned 2 years.
I mean, that's not heckling. Yeah, that's not heckling.
Well, they should never let him back.
The reason they released yesterday was that they were not able to find proof he said the N-word, okay. But they did get multiple accounts that he was being obnoxious throughout the game.
So they suspended him even though there's no proof he said it?
No proof he said the N-word, but there was evidence he was being belligerent and out of control.
Okay.
So it must have been hearsay that he said that.
Yeah.
It was from DeMarcus himself.
Okay. I'm not going to say I'm not hot on this because I don't think it's that much different as far as that goes.
Sure.
I think like the thing with James Dolan a couple weeks ago, that's a joke. Like trying to
kicking a guy out for kind of saying you should sell the business.
That's as tame as it gets. Like please sell the team, sir. Like, just don't come back, sir.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The level to which that heckling can go and how low it goes is awful. Like that's no good.
Yeah, and I think the heckling piece, when you take it out of the stadium, like I said, and take it to social media, and you start to troll on social media.
If it's threatening.
Yeah, and that kind of stuff. That's what I'm talking about. I think in terms of the stuff where you're like, yeah, you know, you stink, no one likes you here, boo, you're booing you and all that. Like, I mean, I think it's, you know, I think that's a good thing. But the other end of the spectrum is obviously not.
Okay, so yeah.
Okay, so we're on the same page.
Yeah.
All right. You want to put the last one in, or do we not have time for that?
Well, we can do it quick.
Yeah, I'll do it real quick.
Okay. Major sporting events are starting way too late in the evening.
Yeah, man, hot. I mean, how can you start a game at 11 o'clock at night? I mean, the other day, the Virginia Sweet 16 game against Oregon started at 11-something at night. Come on now. Give me a break.
I'm not hot. I like sports at all hours. Like, I'm on board.
For the Virginia had to play Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in this term. I'm just saying now. So it's not very fair.
If it's a Sunday, a sports game should not start after 5. People have work tomorrow. Yeah, let them enjoy their sports.
I mean, it's all about TV. Things. We get the TV rings. But I mean, these games start at 11 o'clock at night and it's on the East Coast. Come on. Give me a break. All right. That's hot or not. We'll come right back to tie a bow on the show. Don't go anywhere.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over. But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Today, man, thank you so much for doing this with us.
Good to be back
in the saddle here. And what a show we had. Eric Bolin, New York News, some Yankees. He seems to think the Yankees are going to the World Series, and I'm completely all right with that.
You're booking your tickets?
Oh, yeah, I might as well. Yeah, Eric Bolin says it. I'm going to say it. I want to thank Ian Levy from NBA Insider from fansided.com. He had some pretty good perspective on what he expects. He thinks we're going to see a Milwaukee Golden State final, and hey, that'd be pretty cool with that.
Yeah.
Even though I'd like to see what the Celtics do here. I mean, maybe the Celtics are kind of in a position where, you know, they just want to get to the tournament as well, and then Kyrie will be Kyrie. And
they'll get their act together. Yeah.
But when you start going after the coach and Brad Stevens, I just think that's a huge problem.
Yeah.
Poll question, the Green City Garage poll question. Let's see what the ending of this was. It's pretty interesting. So the Green City Garage poll question, what we got today, bub?
So 40% say the NFL is their favorite sports league. 4% say the NBA. 28% say the NHL. And 28% say the MLB.
So what's interesting to me is that the NBA is at 4%.
Yeah.
Think about that for a minute. And how high the NHL is. I mean, that to me, I think that poll right there shows you that's an interesting dynamic.
It's favorite sports season, like start of the season.
Yeah, I think,
like,
well, I just think, you know, you get excited. You know, when that season, you're all in. You know what I mean? For you, it might be when golf season starts, you know, the NFL season starts, you know, baseball season starts. But whatever, you're just jacked up that the season's here and you're ready to watch.
Right. And I we were talking off air. I think NHL, like, this is hockey country. Maybe being this close to Montreal. Yep. Those Canadiens fans.
And the Bruins are playing great hockey obviously.
True.
Yeah. So I still think that the NBA got 4% of the vote kind of tells you where the NBA is. I mean, the regular season is just, I mean, I know that I think playoff anything is awesome. I'm not a huge hockey fan, but I love playoff hockey is the best. I mean, I think that rivals almost with the NCAA tournament in terms of intrigue when
it's
it comes
electric,
to that.
Absolutely.
It
electric.
Really is. But the NBA, you know, it's like, you know,
okay, I mean, the season's 6 months, and then we got 7 months, 8 months. I don't know. October to...
Yeah, it ends in June.
Yeah.
Basically, like, right? Middle of
but
June.
But the playoffs take 2 months on their own. Yeah, so that's the thing. It's like, how can you get that excited in October?
And then not even the players really put that much stock in the regular season. I mean, I've heard guys who are big sports bettors saying they don't bet on regular season NBA games anymore because they've seen what the players are willing to do in their off time because they don't care.
Yeah, right. and it's also the NBA has also become like the have and have nots. I mean, you got the power teams, you got these superstars that keep joining these teams together, and then you got the outliers like a Milwaukee that no one seems to think about, but they're a great team, and I hope they win the championship.
Well, last night was the Timberwolves beat Golden State 131-130?
Yeah.
Timberwolves aren't making the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. That's because Golden State just want to get the one seed, get to the tournament, and then we go. I'm telling you, that team is just, they're just going to turn it on. All right, guys, listen, this is Sports Saturday. We're here every Saturday from 10 a.m. to noon here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. Aaron will have the podcasts up on the on 101.3.com if you want to hear it later on. We appreciate listening to you. Enjoy your weekend. Be safe. Things are going to be wet and wild. Baseball started. Keep it right here. Listen to our sister stations. What do you got today? Today, 8:10, you got the Sox in Seattle. Today on 101.3 The Game on 960 The Zone, you can listen to the Elite Eight starting at 5 o'clock. You got Florida and the Bruins at 12:30. And on AM 620, you got the Yankees in Baltimore playing at 12:25 is when the coverage starts. So listen, enjoy your sports weekend. Have a great one. We love you. Thanks for listening. And hey, wahoo wah, baby. Go Hoos. We'll be back next week.